In this episode of the Critical Myth crew begins their annual rundown of the shows from the past 12 months and starts with the shows that fell below the average mark. It's episode 460, The Shallow End of the Season's Pool.
We are back. We're at episode 460 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and it's been feast or famine around here. Folks, welcome to famine.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I know I had to kick my DVR to make sure it still worked because nothing's popping up lately.
And this is Bronstam from Australia, and in the television landscape at least, winter has come.
Actually, isn't this supposed to be like the shortest day of the year for you folks down there?
I have no idea. I was asleep until about 45 minutes ago.
All right. Well, there you go. Hibernation and so forth. All right. Well, we are going to be jumping into what is has become a bit of an event for us here at Critical Myth, and that is our annual wrap-up. Every June, because it is literally the slowest month of the year for the television season, we get together, we go down our list of from the very bottom all the way up to the top of the shows that we have reviewed over the past year, whether it be here or on the website, which would now be vognetwork.com. But we start at the bottom and we basically kind of recap what it is that we've been watching. And sometimes it goes all the way back to June, July of last year, and sometimes it's stuff that wrapped up literally just the other day. But basically... we will be starting in this episode with the bottom. And guys, as usual, we're talking about 40-plus shows that over the course of the year, or at least I should say 40 seasons, because there are a couple things in there that duplicate. Of course they do. But, yeah, wow, quite a lot. So we might as well jump right into it. And Edmund, why don't you give a little bit of a disclaimer while I pull up the list?
In discussing these shows, we might talk about something that happened on them, so you may be spoiled, but as John just said, with some of this stuff, it's going back a year, so if you're listening to the show, we're pretty sure you've probably seen them.
We would think, although, you know, we do have surprises in store, but having said that we give you plenty of time, we're actually going to be starting off with, at the very bottom of our list, as I try to bring up my notes, because there we go. All right, starting at now, this, what I will say is that this is the first time that we have had, out of all these 40-plus shows and seasons that we have been reviewing, this is the first season where we did not have one show that averaged below 6 in terms of a score. There's usually at least one show that is the absolute below average, kind of treading the bottom of the fetid side of the lake kind of show, but this time around we didn't quite hit that low. Instead,
well, in my defense, I didn't weigh in on a few of the Warehouse 13 episodes.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because what show did rank right at the bottom? That would be Warehouse 13 Season 5, which came in at an average of 6.1, which is down from the previous season a whopping 1.1. That's a pretty big drop. So yeah, I'd like to hear, actually, Bronstam, I'd like to hear your opinion of that. Does that seem like it's the show that deserves to be at the bottom of the list?
I think so. I think I possibly would have rated it slightly lower, because even though I thought the finale was not terrible in a good way, but only because some of the episodes preceding it were really terrible. When we review Sherlock, one of the things we talk about is the fact that it tends to rate really, really high, because three episodes with good reviews will have a very, very high average, and that's how it plays out if you've got a season of a show that's only a very small number of episodes. Is that there's not a lot of opportunity to pull back if you've got a real stinker, and this season had some real stinkers. It really it took the things that I didn't like about Warehouse 13 in the latter years, and it made them worse.
Yeah, dramatically so. Like,
yeah. Possibly this could have gone down another point, and you know, I wouldn't bat an eyelid. It was not strong.
Yeah. What would you add to that, Gary?
Well, I want to say when they announced that the show was ending, as we were in the middle of viewing towards the end of season 4, I was really upset. It seemed that they had somewhat hit their stride. They were doing these sort of larger arc stories, and we were getting some nice character pieces. And Claudia was really coming into her own, and I was very upset and sad to hear that we were having that it was ending, that we were getting such a small fifth season, and. I was sort of hoping they'd really go out on a swan song, a really big sort of ending. And unfortunately, season 5 never became that at all. It was really felt hacked together, and almost as if they were throwing leftover ideas into the mix just to finish them off, like they had a script on their desk somewhere. And even Pete, who had in a lot of ways developed a lot during the course of the show, seemed to fall back to almost first season stupidity and goofiness. And the final insult to the season of having Pete and Micah have become love interests just did a disservice not only to the characters, but even to all they had done over the course of the season. I mean, over the series. It was very disappointing that they chose to literally squeeze that in the last 2 to 3 episodes. It was very disheartening to me. And I believe I'm going to exercise the Highlander corollary where I'm going to say season 5 never existed.
Ooh, yeah, that's saying quite a lot right there. Edmund, how about you? What would you add to the mix?
Yeah, reiterating what a disappointment this was, given how much the show had developed, and seeing it just completely regress and backtrack was very bizarre. And especially given the fact this was not a case like Eureka where they're getting yanked around in terms of how much they were going to be able to do. I was just very surprised and disappointed that they didn't treat this as an opportunity to do, like, a nice little mini series. Not that the two completely different shows, but like was demonstrated on Torchwood with Children of Earth, of you've got 6 episodes, you've got all these characters set up, these relationships set up, and just come up with an ongoing story that takes them out instead of that bizarre hodgepodge we got. Where it just seemed like they were just taking random ideas and throwing them out there. And of course, whoever thought they should parody telenovelas should just never work on a show I like again.
when your parody of a telenovela makes it seem like the telenovela is actually parodying you, that's saying a lot. But I think that just to break this down just slightly more, our collective individual scores were anywhere from a 5.8 to a 6.3. So yeah, we all kind of agreed that this was down towards the latter end of the list, unfortunately. All right, well, moving on then to one of the shows that actually premiered in the mid-season. And we did mention at one point that a lot of the mid-season shows seem to really let us down. Not that that was always all that surprising, though. In this case, I would say probably not. Star-Crossed Season 1 came in at a 6.3, which is, of course, below average. But I guess for New Fare, it came in right towards the bottom, definitely in the bottom 2. So, Gary, I know you gave this one a shot, and then you dropped it about halfway through. I know I took it for the team, but I think it's probably best for you to go ahead and explain why you dropped it, because it's probably the reason why it ranked so low.
Well, I guess, honestly, I was looking for an alien show, and I got Romeo and Juliet in very veiled format to a large extent. And while it could have worked, I think, if they kept respecting some of the alien sort of nature, and we would have discovered a little bit more about that culture and stuff like that. It was always held at arm's length in an almost teasing manner, and always background. It was never really brought to the surface that much, and it was frustrating. I wanted to see a new world, and I really just got to see a ghetto.
Right, and I know that one of the things that we at least saw from the previews was the possibility of really going into that kind of narrative territory that Alien Nation introduced way back, 20 years now?
And, oh, gosh, if only, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of teased it and then never really went there, which was probably the most disappointing side of it all. But, yep, that came in at a 6.3 in its one and only season. So, at least we can say that those two shows, Warehouse 13 and Starcross, kind of are done. They wrapped up. They can't drop any more than they already have. We can't say that for the next show, which it's hard for me to believe, but out of this bottom, 10 or 12 shows that we're going to cover here, a remarkable number of them have been renewed. And while up towards the more average score, I can see why. Some of these other shows, I'm still kind of scratching my head. And, appropriately enough, since it just restarted, Falling Skies Season 3 last summer came in at a 6.4, which itself was a drop of 0.4 of a point. So, it wasn't even hitting our average score last year or the year previous, and now we've got a 6.4. I don't know if you guys can remember back that far, but would anybody want to kind of weigh in on maybe some of the issues with Falling Skies, maybe just in general over those three seasons, where the show is going and our concerns as it tries to go into a fourth season at this point?
Well, I'll go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to interject that I didn't watch past the first half of the first episode of this season, but in the two seasons preceding it, my problem was that this was a show about characters in a post-apocalyptic scenario who had formed this sort of military hierarchy or whatever as their way of survival. It has a lot of parallels to Battlestar Galactica. The best episodes were the ones that really felt like Battlestar Galactica episodes because they gave the characters a mission, a purpose. They let character and story sort of play out as an expression of what they were trying to accomplish that week or that season. But they couldn't do that on a regular basis. They just sort of floundered in dumb plot developments and cheesy attempts at drama. And, by the third season, I just had enough of it.
Gary, what would you add to that?
Well, in some ways, they did shake up the show a little bit this season. We had the new aliens come in, and they went on a much more of an offensive attack against the Skitters and the other aliens. And they were trying to it became less of a survival story and more of a guerrilla war story. And I know that turned a lot of people off. They were hoping for more of the downtrodden storyline to go on. And I heard people have problems with that. So I felt like they were trying to shake things up a little bit and introduce some sort of new topics for discussion where they weren't constantly, they were able to get off one good shot against, against the villain, center in this area of town or something like this. And it became much more of a, they could reconquer the world again. And I thought it was a little bit more of an optimistic season that they could, that there was a chance again, that they weren't against, unbelievable odds. It wasn't just a war of attrition anymore. It was a war that they could actually, fight back thanks to the new aliens' technology and resources. So they shook it up a little bit. I admit it still falls into standard B science fiction trope. And now, I do like B science fiction movies, but I agree it lacks a depth in the characters. They never seem to really go anywhere anymore. The first season was a lot more character driven, and I felt like we got to know those first season characters much better than any characters that have come by since then. So it seems to be shallowing out more and more, going for the cheap, easy science fiction story as opposed to the personal drama, which I think when Bronstam's talking about BSG is sort of the aspect that he's mentioning.
Mm. Yeah, it was to the point at the end of last season where they were hinting at some of the layers that they could, or the direction that they could go in this season. And I'll be honest, then I saw these previews that they're showing in the movie theater to try and hype up the fourth season, and I can't figure out how that has anything to do with where they left off the third season. It doesn't even match. It makes no sense. So I'm curious to see where they go here. Quite frankly, there's so little else on right now that I might as well punish myself with it. I'm curious to see if they can turn it around. But at this point, I think it's on a trajectory that it's just not going to ever really be what the kind of in-depth show that we were hoping that it could be. Speaking of shows that are kind of inexplicable, especially where they're going to go in the next season. Helix Season 1, which came in its first inaugural season at a 6.4. And I know we've gone a little bit into depth into our concerns about this show, and certainly the first season pretty much ended things on such a note that the second season could be anything. We really have no idea what it's going to be. Edmund, you haven't been able to weigh in a little bit. maybe some of your thoughts. Why did Helix come in so low?
Well, I think primarily it was especially once we got to the end of that finale and we discovered that this was a very long 13-episode prologue. And as you said, they left it at a point where they can go in any number of directions because everything that had been set up was kind of literally destroyed, and there is some intriguing stuff that's now been introduced in terms of taking this fight to a more global stage. But I really got the sense that was something they could have done in a half to a third of the time they had, just have the Arctic stuff be set up for this bigger battle, and having to stretch it out through 13 episodes just left things just as we were just talking about with Falling Skies, things getting shallow, and because in terms of the characterizations and the situation, it wasn't deep or interesting enough to sustain it over what is a shorter cable season, but it just felt like there wasn't enough material there.
Mm. What would you add to that, Bronstone? I believe you watched Helix.
I watched the first two thirds of it.
And,
I think.
Yeah. Why did you drop it? that's the question.
It was really going nowhere. I felt like it was just any creepiness, any genuine sense of intrigue and mystery that the beginning of the season built up, they just completely let the air out of it. It was just so much boring procedure that they were parading around and trying to make me believe was tense and smart when I really thought it was anything but.
Mm. Anything to add, Gary, for Helix?
I realize it's science fiction and you always suspend a little disbelief, but the storylines increasingly got so unbelievable, as well as people's actual behaviors in the show got so, one-dimensional that it lost any, it had no depth, and I started watching it. I don't know if I want to say taking it for the team, but it almost became comical, even though that was never the impression that the writers were going for. It was almost one of those things where, oh gosh, it's coming on again. It's horrible. Let's see how they screw it up now.
Yeah, I wish I could argue with that, but that pretty much sums up where my thoughts are on this too. I think that I'll probably check out the second season, if only to see what kind of craziness they're going to go with, but. In a few different ways, I almost feel like we had been talking about how sci-fi, for all of its bad publicity and its reputation, had really gone on a pretty good run of introducing new shows, to the point where it might have taken them a season just to get their feet under them at the beginning with shows like Warehouse 13 or even Eureka, in terms of getting the audience really invested. But then we had shows like Alphas and Being Human and a couple other examples, I would say Continuum as a show that they picked up to air because of what it could offer, where they were really on a good roll. And then this was the first show that had a really huge amount of publicity behind it and just plotted right into the ground, like just drove straight death spiral right into the ground. And I don't know if it's a difference in terms of it was just going to statistically happen sooner or later anyway, but it definitely was disappointing. It just really, I was not expecting that from Ronald D. Moore at all. And I'm hoping that he kind of bounces back with that Outlander show that is coming this summer on Starz, because I think my wife will be very disappointed if he messes that one up. All right, let's go ahead then and move on to the next show, which is, again, a mid-season replacement show, so to speak. And this would be Believe, Season 1, a one-season show that just wrapped up with an average score of 6.5. So right between what is generally considered below average and average on our end, so kind of kicking it more towards the average at this point. But it is a show that was canceled. Now, I did watch the entire 12-episode season, but I believe, Edmund, you dropped it about maybe halfway through, if not quite halfway through. And what issues did you kind of led you to that decision?
What was getting to me was the the formulaic nature of it. Even though there was that backstory and with the Skouros and Winter and where she came from and her mother and what the whole organization that Skouros had built up. There was still at its root that whole thing of, oh, Bo's always going to have somebody she has to save, and that's going to get in the way of what they're trying to do. And it just started very early on, started feeling like the same thing over and over again. So for me, it was just too much of that sort of formulaic procedural, and actually very similar, and I think in many ways, how I felt at the beginning of Touch, which I also dropped rather early on, but with these more sort of science fictiony, telepathic, telekinetic gloss put on top of it, but that was the thing that was getting to me, and it's also a case of I get really annoyed, and this is going on to a certain extent with Helix as well, but I think even more with Believe, where you get this wonderful cast together, and then they are doing their best to hold the writing aloft, but it didn't feel to me like they were getting enough to really chew on.
Yeah, I think that they did the special child with abilities angle a bit better, in my opinion, than Touch did. Touch went so much for the treaky stuff that was just the saccharine ridiculousness, and trying to have Kiefer Sutherland as this very strident and non-Jack Bauer-esque father really just didn't work for me at all. In this case, I felt like the dynamics were better. I liked Kyle MacLachlan and his character of Skouros and the whole orchestra thing. That whole mythology side of it, the serial elements of the show, actually weren't that bad, and if they had focused more on that, I think that the show would have been fine. It was the need to every episode reduce it down to some kind of episodic, you know, troubled person who needs help of the week that just dragged it down, because no matter what happened, it was always going to spend way too much time on that instead of the things that were actually interesting. And at the end of the day, when they finally did go back to the serialized stuff in the last couple episodes, it felt like the show took a tonal switch that it never really had built up correctly towards. But again, this is a one-season show, so, you know, unfortunately, that melding of the minds will not get another season to kind of flesh itself out and maybe learn from its errors. What a show that will, which is somewhat inexplicable, because I think if I had to predict which of these two shows was going to be the one renewed and which one would have been canceled, this is the exact opposite of how I felt it would go. Also coming at 6.5 in its inaugural season is Resurrection, which was only 8 episodes. And this one is particularly strange because it was basically 4 episodes worth of story that got so stretched out over 8 episodes that it's hard to believe that in an 8-episode season you feel like a serialized story can completely lose its sense of direction. But that's exactly what it felt like it was doing about halfway through. And it wasn't until the last couple episodes that it really felt like it finally committed to doing what they probably should have done in episode 3 or 4. All that said, it got remarkable ratings, enough for it to get renewed, even though it really, on a narrative level, didn't quite deliver. Anything to add on that, Edmund? Because I know you were also watching this at least at the beginning.
Yeah, no, I dropped both of them at about the same time, but yeah, I mean, this is certainly a case of they were airing opposite each other, and for whatever reason, more people were watching Resurrection, so. Especially on the networks, TV is about the numbers, and they got the numbers, so they get to try and move on from here. And as I mentioned when I was watching it, I'm just waiting for Les Revenants season 2 to come back to Sundance.
Well, they did leave it in a good place, let me put it that way. So we'll have to see whether or not they can maybe just ramp up the tension a little bit, get things moving a little faster. That's kind of where I think it needs to go. At any rate, let's go ahead then and move on to our next show on the list. Oh, and here's a show that actually is coming to a close after a long run. And, oh, I'm sure there's going to be some commentary here. Dexter Season 8 came in at a 6.6, which was a full half point down from the previous season. And Bronstum, what would you like to say?
It's not okay that he's a lumberjack!
Yes. Thank you.
He was holding that in for the last, 25 minutes, but anyway.
Sorry, you know that you have a really bad season finale, a series finale, when it makes me retroactively like the entire show less. My God, that was a terrible, terrible, terrible way to end the show.
For just that moment, I think you probably felt like some of the more disaffected Lost viewers felt. That's all I can say.
I thought we weren't talking about that. Oh, sorry.
They have a perspective that leans one way when the show was trying to go a different way. I'm talking about Dexter was really objectively bad. I mean, this. I'm pretty sure it's scientific. It's bad as is scientifically calculatable. There's probably a formula somewhere. Like, this isn't opinion. That was bad.
What's amazing to me, I didn't even watch the show. And after 8 seasons, even I could tell from the reaction that the finale was considered to be just a complete and utter piece of crap. I mean, really, there was not one person that I knew that thought that the series ended well. Edmund, what would you like to add to this?
Well, I was going to say, you know, and this was—I mean, it was the negative capstone on a season that that went off the rails much earlier than previous Dexter seasons have. And these later seasons were beset by some decent ideas that were then never really properly developed or just petered out, and then they started doing something else, and this season just took it to extremes, and then that finale was just absolutely absurd. I mean, especially for a show where throughout its entire run, the big talking point was, okay, at the end of the show, does Dexter die or does he get caught? And they managed to do neither.
Oh, well, what can you do? All right, we're going to take a quick mid-show break, and then we'll be back with the last 5 shows we're going to cover in this particular episode, so stay tuned.
I wanted to be a lumberjack. Leaping from tree to tree as they float down the mighty rivers of British Columbia. The giant redwood, the larch, the fir, the mighty Scots pine, the smell of fresh-cut timber, the crash of mighty trees. With my best girlie by my side, we'd sing, sing, sing. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night, I work all day.
He's a lumberjack and he's okay. He sleeps all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I eat my lunch, I go to the lavatory. On Wednesdays I go shopping and have buttered scones for tea.
He cuts down trees, he eats his lunch, he goes to the lavatory. On Wednesdays he goes shopping and has buttered scones for tea. He's a lumberjack and he's okay. He sits all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I skip and jump, I like to press wildflowers. I put on women's clothing and hang around in bars.
He cuts down trees, he skips and jumps, he likes to press wildflowers. He puts on women's clothing and hangs around in bars. He's a lumberjack and he's okay. He works all day.
I cut up trees, I wear high heels, suspenders and a bra. I wish I'd been a girlie, just like my dear mama. I cut down trees, wear high heels, suspenders and a bra. I wish I'd been a girlie, just like my dear mama.
All right, and I hope everybody enjoyed that little intermission. I think that it was an appropriate choice. But not to be outdone, we have another show that has been renewed that, well, it came in at a 6.6, just like Dexter's final season, but this was a drop of, well, possibly massive proportion doesn't quite put it. Homeland Season 3, 6.6, down a full 1.6 points. That's... I'm just going to go and look to see if this is a record. Edmund, somebody, weigh in on this.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could also say, I mean, given what was going on in season two, I mean, this was the continued decline from the second half of season two on, when season two started very strong and then just completely lost itself in trying to become the new 24 before 24 actually came back. And then this season with the whole carry is as mentally ill mole. Especially because at the end of season two with Brody on the run, and it looked like they were finally going to get back to, or it's not even necessarily get back to, or start concentrating on Saul and Carrie and that key relationship, and then just decided to go nutty with the plotting. As far as I'm concerned, a tale of two shows. There was the show from the first season and a half, and then the show from then onwards, and they are just two completely different animals.
Yeah, now, Bronstum, I know that you watched the first couple episodes of season three. Did you get any further than that, or was that more than enough?
No, I got to the episode that was Brody-centric and was just bored out of my skull.
Okay. What's ironic is that was the highest scored episode that we gave for the season, and it was still not the best thing in the world.
I had been ho-hum on everything before that, and then we get to Brody, and I don't care about the character. They'd lost me on him, and there was just nothing in the show anymore that held my interest.
Where they go from here is going to be very interesting, that's all I can say, because they had the opportunity in season three to go a completely different direction, and instead they chose to spend an entire season meditating on the Abyss, and now even the Abyss is gone. So what else did they have to really do other than to reinvent themselves? Unfortunately, this is Howard Gordon and his modus operandi, which is that he can only pull the trick once or twice before making things up literally hours before it hits the set. Eventually catches up with them, and the writer's room just is scrambling to figure out what to do, and this is the kind of season that results.
Yeah, the last thing I just want to mention is that one of the major behind-the-scenes things happened was Henry Brummell dying, and that Brody-centric episode was, in fact, his last script, which was actually finished by his son. And I think with his influence out of the writer's room, that's part of the problem now that it is, it is the Howard Gordon show again, or completely now, and some of that better pedigree from Homicide and Rubicon that Brummell brought is gone from the show now. So who knows what's going to happen?
Indeed. All right. Well, moving on then to a show that the last few we're going to talk about in this episode are coming in around average, and this is probably the one that was the most on the fence. I think a lot of people wanted this show to come back, but I think that people also understood why it didn't. And that would be Almost Human Season 1, which came in at a 6.8. So it was trying to be at the very dead average score for on our scale. It didn't quite make it, but it's pretty close. Gary, what would you say in your mind is, was the cancellation deserved? Or was this a missed opportunity, do you think?
Well, it was both, but oh yeah, it was well-deserved. They had so many good concepts come through this show, and they failed to follow through on any one of them. Let's see, we had the genetically altered people, as we later found out, although the airing of the episodes out of order sort of confused that, especially for the one policewoman character. So that was one thing. You had genetic advanced people. Then we had this whole thing about the androids rebelling was a second one. Then we had the rogue scientist who helped develop robots, who also also could have been a great plot line to run off with it. Then we could have even gone more into the android trying to more acclimate into humanity, or show some more of the problems that he's actually having. We had an episode or two where they touched on it, and they could have even sort of steered the show that way. Or we had I'm already blanking on names and say Kennex.
Kennex, yeah.
Yes.
Kennex, we had his whole thing of handling the working with androids and stuff like that, and how he was sort of pushing against it, but he sort of came to an acceptance with his partner, and that might have even broadened over time, but we never got to see that either. There's just any one of those concepts they could have easily ran a whole season with, and instead we see it for about an episode and a half, and then it disappears and is never seen again. It was very frustrating that I felt they had good concepts, and they never wanted to do them, or they wanted to keep introducing new ones. And I think that's ultimately what watered the show down enough to kill it for me.
What would you guys add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what also what made it even more disappointing was it coming from people involved in Fringe, and at the beginning, the fact that there was that more sort of procedural element to it, I was ready to give them the benefit of the doubt in terms of how Fringe started, and was hoping that some of those background elements and those behind the scene things that were being mentioned were actually going to come more to the forefront. And it seemed like when in that episode with John Larroquette as the creator of the androids was introduced, I really thought, oh good, okay, now we're getting that deeper backstory and undercurrents coming more to the fore. And instead, he just disappeared over that wall, and which is also one of our first major hints about exactly how the society was divided and what's out in those wastelands. And he disappeared, and the rest of the plot line did too. And
that's putting it mildly.
Yeah,
I don't think it can be emphasized nearly enough how the rearrangement of the episodes, running them out of order, contributed to all of this, because I think even we said many times during the run that it was very obviously the source of a lot of the confusion and the feeling that the show was not really coming together and gelling. But I think even beyond that, Gary's point is dead on, that even if you were to take things and rearrange them, the season went nowhere. It literally just ended. There was no point to it. So yeah, I think that no matter how you shake it, it just was unrealized potential. So I think another season might have helped, but again, I don't know that it earned it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of those things where part of me wanted them to get that second season to try and work on these things a bit more, but also when we got to those final episodes where it was actually being aired in the order it was supposed to be aired, they really weren't bringing those elements to the fore enough. I mean, you know, there wasn't that ongoing story getting developed that I was interested in seeing it continue.
Mm. Bronstone, did you watch Almost Human, or was this one that you skipped? Do we have?
No, this was one that I watched. It was just it just kind of went nowhere. It had the first few episodes set up. Mythology stuff, story arc stuff, character stuff to deal with, and they just did nothing with it. Mm. By the end of the season, we were as in the know on what's going on in this universe as we were in the first episode. I didn't care that much about the characters. I didn't care that much about what was happening in this world, the backstory, what was going to happen next, and I didn't trust the people making the show to do any better than that after, you know, beyond the first season. So I wasn't sorry at all when this one got canceled.
I can tell you that it is. I do think it's too bad that we won't find out what they were going to do in the second season, but I am absolutely certain that the beginning of the second season premiere would have been Kennex and Dorian in a car having a conversation with some quips and maybe some humor.
You know, I didn't mind that as an opening. It seemed very police-like to me, and, you know, it reminds me of the Adam 12 series, I guess, is what, you know, what it goes back to. But, I mean, it was a little cheesy, but I wouldn't mind a little tiny bit of cheese, you know, as comic relief as they go into, you know, heavier concepts. So as I look back at the series, I'm a little less critical about the car opening.
It's just so predictable. Anyway.
You know what I just realized that I really, really want? I want them to basically keep this cast and this world, but instead of doing a police procedural, do True Detective.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do say that they're changing up the cast every year, right?
So. The you know, the one who's just like super strange and depressed and has a whacked out way of looking at the world. Come on, that could segue into Robot.
Yeah, it could. All right, well, speaking of strange and unusual, and also shows that seem like a tale of two seasons in some respect, as we kind of said back in during our Homeland talk, Bitten season one, which came in at a 6.9. I think that the irony here is that when we all kind of took a shot at the pilot episode, we all thought it was quite bad. What's surprising is that about halfway through its first season, it took a drastic step up in quality, and not only got me invested in what was happening on the show, but also intrigued me as to the source material. But that's a pretty good trick to pull. It just wasn't enough of one to pull it out of the basement where it had been previously and get it above the hump of that average rating. But I was happy to hear that it was coming back for a second season. I'm hoping that they can go more along the vein of what they did at this in the second half of this first season versus stumbling out of the gate when it comes back. But I think it earned its... it did what Almost Human did not do. It grew and improved over the course of its first season. So it's a nice counterexample in that respect. Now, going back again, this is our first show that actually is above the 7.0 average mark. But I can't exactly say that it's much above that mark, and it's actually fairly significant that it's that far down. And that would be Supernatural Season 9, coming in at 7.1. That's down 7/10 of a point from the previous season, and it is easily the lowest scored season of Supernatural so far. Bronstum, why did this come in this at this average rating, do you think?
Because it was a very average season, because even some of the latter seasons of the show that had problems, they also had this trend of the first half of the season would be a bit faffier, would be off on something we didn't care about, and the second half of the season would knuckle down on the overarching plot lines and the character development and the stuff that's always really made Supernatural what it was. And so while these latter seasons wouldn't be as strong overall, they would still be recognizable as Supernatural. And this season, I felt like, didn't do a good job of that. It didn't knuckle down until really the last three or four episodes. And even then, it was... I don't know. Even then, I thought there was a bit of a... something incongruous, whatever the word is. Like, the portrayal of Metatron... the way they characterized him, I thought, was a bit all over the shop. Of they were trying to bring back that that meta wink of Chuck, very deliberately, while at the same time making him the big bad villain. And I think that didn't work as well as they'd hoped all the time. And the stuff they were doing with Dean and with Sam didn't really come to fruition until the very, very end of the season. Although it did leave Dean in a really interesting spot that I hope they follow up with well in the next season. But yeah, too much of the season was average or outright bad.
What would you add to that, Edmund, as a relatively newer viewer? I mean, at this point we can't say new because we're now four seasons in, but certainly you're a second half of the series viewer, so...
Yeah, it. I mean, what was really bizarre was that they do have to contend with a standard episode order for a network show of doing these 20 plus episodes of each season. And what was odd is, as Bronstein was saying, whereas rather than ramping up, and they certainly were setting up all of the demons versus angels and Metatron stuff earlier in the season, but even in that second half, it was almost schizophrenic of going from episodes that were focusing on that main arc and then just tossing in standalone filler stuff, and not just Bloodlines, about which the less said the better. I tried to dig into this a little bit, and the one thing that I noticed in terms of some comments on this show, and actually I think it was related to Warehouse 13 as well, but I mean, all of these actors, like particularly Mark Shepard, who is popping up everywhere, there is this downside to that where actually scheduling him can be a real problem. And I really wonder if there's something going on here where they can only get these main players for certain episode for a certain number of episodes, and that wound up really working against them, because it meant that it just felt incredibly choppy in terms of getting to that final showdown. And then it certainly didn't help that the way they were setting up Metatron just never really gelled.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's true. And I said it many times during the season, and in fact, when I wrap everything up and try and explain my feelings, it always comes back to this. Jeremy Carver has always talked about the fact that his tenure, he has this three-season arc in mind, and it's abundantly clear that this was the middle chapter, and that this suffered really badly from middle chapter syndrome. They just didn't have enough to sustain over the course of a season. And they had to fill in a lot of time, and it was obvious to the audience that they were marking time. And when you get to that point, it's just deadly. Because the audience feels like it's filler, And I'm not the kind of person that usually will designate an episode of a show filler, because at least there's usually some kind of character beat or development that's in there that maybe people don't quite appreciate on the same level. But this season, there were some episodes that truly felt like just marking time. And that's not Supernatural. That's not what we're used to seeing after the, you know, in the previous seasons. And when you've got so many fits and starts where it feels like the season is finally going to start getting itself going and it just doesn't do it, it's just a bad result. I'm hoping they can bounce back. It would be really sad to see the show continue to decline and get the feeling that, unfortunately for all the good things that Carver is doing, that he would be presiding over the the swift decline and end of Supernatural. I would like them to go out on a high note, and hopefully this is just a blip towards the end of that cycle. All right, well, we're going to round out this this bottom end of our list with, look at this, how fitting and circular. Warehouse 13 Season 4 came in at a 7.2, which was down from the third season, 0.8. Now, before we talk about Season 4 of Warehouse 13, I'm just going to point out that that means that from the end of Season 3, or the ranking of Season 3 down to the ranking of Season 5, it's essentially a 2-point drop over that course. That's astonishing. But at any rate, Season 4 of Warehouse 13, just for those who maybe don't remember, since it was kind of split up in a very odd way that made it end roughly this time last year, the fourth season was split into 10-episode arcs and aired over the course of 2 different years. And then it went on a long hiatus before the return for the fifth season. But whichever one of you perhaps remembers or has some thoughts on the fourth season of Warehouse 13, I know I have a couple things that I recall that we criticized. Anyone want to jump in on this first, though?
Yeah, I'll jump in. It was a very inconsistent season. They had several good episodes, and then just as it seemed like they were hitting their stride, they throw a real stinker into it. Usually, typically very formulaic, if I remember correctly, where it literally became the old Artifact of the Week episode. And we comment on that. It seemed like they were, they seemed to be hitting their stride as they'd go into either warehouse lore or as artifacts being stolen and things along that nature. And it just was very up and down, but there was more up than down. And, that sort of led to everyone's sort of dismay over the announced cancellation before the fourth season had even finished. That partial fifth season was announced. And I'd gone to a convention with several of the Warehouse 13 people present as season 4 had finished airing, and season 5 was already in the can done when we hadn't even seen the second half of season 4. And, they were talking about it, and they were rather upbeat, as I guess I suppose people who are actually doing the work must be. But at the same time, even you had a sense that they were unfulfilled with it. So, I don't want to drag it too much just to the last season, but yeah, it was a mixture of good and bad, and while not at its peak, was still definitely a watchable season.
It was watchable. I'll give it that. I think that, as I recall, our main problem was that the first half of the season did pretty well, and then it left on a pretty hard cliffhanger, and when it came back, it took that cliffhanger and within an act, maybe not even, it reversed everything that it set up, and then wallowed around in just aimless fashion for the second half of its season. And I think our general scores reflect that. And that's kind of where I was left with it. Edmund, you were going to jump in there?
Yeah, no, that was, it was more, as you guys were talking about it, it was quite a while ago, but it was reminding me going into that cliffhanger and setting something up where it really did look like they were going to a situation of the Earth being much more in peril. It's always been a bit of a trope of them saving the Earth each time, but they went to this point where they were really, really pushing that idea, and then to have it just all undone, as you said, in about 10 to 15 minutes was very strange. And just in retrospect now, it just feels like the beginning of this backtracking into formula and sort of turning their back on all of the good developments that they'd set up in season 3 and then that first half of season 4.
Yeah, the I vaguely recall that my thought process going and coming into the mid-season premiere, the second half of that season, was that it reminded me of that inexplicable moment between seasons 2 and 3 of Millennium, when you had this really strong apocalyptic cliffhanger, and then they come back and just kind of write it off as being far more localized and easily dealt with within the first act of the I just remember staring at the screen thinking, what? How did that happen? But yeah, that's kind of the way I remember feeling in that one episode. Well, that's it. That's our bottom, or I guess you could say our below average shows for this past year. When we come back in our next show, we're actually going to tackle the shows that came in pretty much average. So I guess you could say that they are representative of our baseline of what we consider to be just a kind of workmanship type of show that's just doing what it's supposed to do and is chugging along fairly well. Maybe not hitting too many heights, but then also not really hitting too many lows. So I guess we'll see what that kind of material looks like next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review. So let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.